Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two on a Friday. We're going to go to the phones right now. Stephanie Smith is the president of the Alabama Policy Institute. And if you're not familiar with API, you should be. API is a great organization that focuses on state policy issues here in Alabama, conservative policy positions on things like free markets and strong families and literally standing on core principle values of conservatism. So that being said, they just came out with a report about the sort of the fallacy, if you will, that Medicaid expansion is this most wonderful thing that will save the economy. Not really. Stephanie Smith's on the phone right now. Stephanie Smith, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on to talk about Medicaid expansion, which is something that we've been talking about on and off for decades.
Yeah.
I think that's safe to say, decades.
Yeah. I mean, your time working in the governor's office and everything else, it was probably a topic back then too, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things, you know, especially as a younger staffer at that time, which was a long time ago. You know, there are several issues that we continue to talk about and bat around. This is one of them. Gambling is one of them. They're kind of the zombie issues of Alabama.
Yes. Yes, they are. Well, so Medicaid expansion, I have distinct memories because, you know, Obamacare became all the thing about the time I was taking office myself in the state Senate. And all the calls for Medicaid expansion, we are one of the few states, what, like 10, I believe, that have not chosen to enter into the Obamacare version of expansion. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, that's right. So we have, it's kind of confusing. We have Medicaid in the state of Alabama, but we have not signed on to the federal full expansion of Medicaid. So we have a Medicaid program. 1.1 million people in the state of Alabama are in the Alabama Medicaid program. That's about a little over 20% of the state that has their medical bills paid for by Medicaid. And I think that that's one of the distinctions that people get confused about. We're not talking about access necessarily to care. We're not talking about having people be denied at an emergency room because they don't have insurance. There are already laws in place about that. What
Right.
we're really talking about is who's going to pay the bill after you have some sort of medical care. And so there are already that 1.1 million in the state that are part of the Medicaid program. What the expansion is talking about is expanding under the Affordable Care Act, which we call Obamacare. And he said he liked it too, so let's go with it. Obamacare. It's basically the Southeast plus a few other states that have Texas, I think Michigan, just a few other states that have not, quote, you know, signed on to a full Medicaid expansion. Well, I think that this is one of those things that Alabama has actually done right in holding the line.
Right.
And the reason I think that is not because, you know, I don't want people to have health care or medical care. The reason is because the costs are absolutely skyrocketing and
yes.
astronomical, and they keep going up. And so a lot of the states that have done either a full expansion or have tried this public-private partnership idea that has been batted around in the last year or so in Alabama are actually backing up and trying to undo what they have done because it's completely eating their state budgets alive.
Well, right now, even without the expansion, we're looking at like almost, not quite, like 29%, I believe, 28% of Alabama's general fund budget is Medicaid. Am I right?
That's right. That's right. So it's about, it's about between $800 and $900 million a year current day. If we expanded it, it would be another $230, $240, something like that annually in addition. And so, you know, the general fund budget, you know, Alabama has two different budgets, the education side and the general fund side. The general fund is basically everything except education. And so, you know, to eat up 30, 40, 50, 60% of that general fund budget is not going to work.
No.
It's not a sustainable idea. And so you have to think about the other things that are in that general fund budget that we have to have, like law enforcement and prisons and roads and, you know, basically every other function of government that's not public school related is in the general fund. And so at some point, if there's full Medicaid expansion, those costs will increase The trajectory is clear. Other states have been dealing with it and trying to back up. The general fund will eat itself, basically. So, I mean, there'll be no more money in the general fund. The general fund is funded by basically stagnant types of taxes.
Yeah.
It's not the income tax or the sales tax that fund those. That's what funds the education fund. So you have slow growth taxes feeding into this pot of money, and then you would be adding a huge catalyst of spending on the other side. So the budget reasons are reason enough, in my opinion, to be against Medicaid expansion. But then there are other considerations, and that is the list of people who are already covered by our Medicaid program are really kind of the people that you would think need to be covered,
right,
you know, under the Medicaid program. It's mothers, children, full-time caregivers, people who live in nursing homes, people who are disabled, anyone who is elderly. So kind of the list of people who would need aid for medical purposes, for paying those bills, are already in the system. The gap of people that are outside of the system right now, there are some working poor people who have a hard time getting on state Medicaid, but that's what Obamacare was supposed to be for. And then also a lot of people who are not working at all. You know, we have a labor force participation rate that is abysmal. You know, we have just over half of Alabamians working on a daily basis. And this type of expansion of a program like this would actually disincentivize work.
Yeah, basically, and it would make that labor force stay home at that point.
Well, that's exactly right, because there's also this idea, okay, well, we'll expand the program. And anybody who wants to work, even a part-time job, but definitely a full-time job, anybody who wants to apply for work or work, they would be eligible for this program. Well, the Biden-Harris administration says, no, 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 you can't put those strings on it. You can't make people work. You actually get bumped off of the program, or we won't even allow you to put that into your program if you have work requirements as an accountability measure. They rejected Arkansas's last year. They've rejected Georgia's, North Carolina's. And so if we end up with a Harris administration, there's no question in my mind that they would not allow work requirements.
Yeah, what you're
so
saying
it's actually
basically
paying people not to work.
What you're saying basically is, aside from paying people not to work, it's as if they want to grow a dependency mentality.
Oh, 100%. That, I mean, there's no other reason that you would disincentivize people seeking the job if they just have different goals. The goal is not to have people working, it's to have dependent people.
Well, Steph, let me ask you this real quick before, because I do want to change topics on you before we run out of time.
Sure.
In just a minute. But one of the things that you always hear, and the Democrats called for it all the time, the federal government will pick up the tab. The federal government will pick up the tab. And first of all, my counterpoint was always first, well, where do you think the federal government gets its money? But then,
that's right.
But then secondly, the federal government's picking up the tab for a portion for a while for the match and for the plus up, and then that fades away and we're stuck with the bill.
Yeah, it's basically like a balloon loan.
It's a bait and switch.
And so you sign on to something and then you know it's going to grow later, but you don't know how you're going to pay for it later. Even just the federal portion, I mean, the state portion of the federal expansion would be $300 million a year for the state, much less, you know, as they shift that percentage from the federal government to the state government as far as who's holding the bag. So it's just an unsustainable program, and you're signing the state up for something that you know is going to bankrupt one of your major funding sources in the state that pays for what we actually need in state government. So it's ill-advised from several different directions, and really we just can't afford it.
I got to ask you, as you guys put your finger on the pulse of things in Montgomery, are you hearing any softening of Republicans towards the idea of this expansion? Is there a discussion about that actually happening?
There was some discussion last year, comparison of this Arkansas public-private partnership model, which is why we focused on that during our, you know, in our report and in some of our information, because it's a failure. It's a failure in Arkansas right now. They're trying to get out of it. The costs have been so high, and they underestimated how many people would be in the program, and they also underestimated costs, so it's bankrupting their budget right now. So they're trying to get out of it. So there was some talk about it last year. Yeah, it's one of those things. If you rename something that sounds better, then people get confused or may sign on to it. But keep in mind, you have to have a full sign-off federal expansion before you could have a public-private partnership put in place. So there's no public-private partnership instead of a Medicaid expansion. Well, that is Medicaid expansion.
I guess the last question on this is there's always been this kind of tension in Montgomery about if the legislature won't do it, the governor could just do it by herself through an executive order. Is there any indication that Ivy, being a lame duck and basically heading to the House and not caring, could she do that? Do you see that happening?
I do not see that happening, which is a breath of fresh air. The conversations that I've had with her staff, she is saying almost the exact same thing that we're saying at API, which is it's an unsustainable program, and it would tie us to something that we would not be able to pay the bill for in the long run. So it's irresponsible, which is
good.
Very, very good news to
good,
hear.
Good to hear. I tell you what, we ran all the way to the end of this segment on that. Do you have the ability to hang on during a break and come back and talk about something separate? I want to talk to you about the state health officer, Scott Harris, not one of my favorite people. There's a new story out about him today. All right, great. We'll do that. We'll take a break right now. We're on the line right now with Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute. We'll come back from that. There's a new story out on 1819 News today that our illustrious state health officer, Scott Harris, who shut things down during COVID, is now the president of a new George Soros-linked organization. Ah, boy. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, we're going right back to the phones right now. Stephanie Smith is the president of the Alabama Policy Institute, a conservative organization that's been around now for 35 years, just had their 35th anniversary a few weeks ago, founded originally by who is now Congressman Gary Palmer. I was proud to serve on staff there for several years, and the reality is they do great work at tracking down conservative policy issues and giving you the deep dive figures on it. Hey, Steph, I want to change subjects. A story came out today that kind of caught me off guard. You and I have both been supportive of changing things related to our state health officer. Scott Harris is the guy who has held the position now. During COVID, he's the reason why things were getting shut down. Go figure, no one even realized that he had the authority, but he also had a position that the governor didn't control. And now he's got a new position. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so Scott Harris, your listeners probably already know, but would recall he was kind of the one in the mask standing next to Kay Ivey at all of the 27 times they declared a state of emergency and kept our churches and schools closed for so long during COVID. And he's done a few things since then as well that have kind of, put him on the hot seat. The most recent one is that he's been named president of the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. That sounds really boring, but the interesting thing about that is that that group purports to focus on health equity and anti-racism. And anti-racism, if your listeners have never really heard that term, that sounds good, but actually anti-racism means you must be racist now toward people in order to correct for racism in the past. And then health equity, could also sound good, but health equity means outcomes. And so health equity thought processes have been used to actually create racial quotas, from all the way from, who gets into medical school to who gets treated first in an emergency room. And, kind of the idea from, the latest hurricane that, Kamala Harris came out with the idea several years ago that, those in disadvantaged or historically disadvantaged communities or, types of people should be helped first in an emergency. That's what this kind of group actually teaches and promotes, which is people in historically disadvantaged bodies should be cared for first. And that's an anti-American principle.
Well, it is. And that's actually that type of DEI principle in terms of providing necessary care. FEMA actually still has it on their website that their number one goal at FEMA is not just emergency management. It's actually to make sure they have emergency management equity. So that being said, that's all throughout the government. This organization, though, that Scott Harris, our Alabama state health officer, is a part of. And by the way, if I'm not mistaken,
he's leading now.
Well, he's leading. That Scott Harris himself, Alabama's state health officer, also challenged and then tried to backtrack his own challenge to the VCAP bill that we passed in Alabama that prevents transgender surgeries and treatments against minors. So that's who we're talking about. But this organization,
he said he was appalled that we passed that bill.
Yes, he did. But now this organization he's a part of has ties to George Soros' Open Society Economic Justice Program.
Right. It's funded by Soros and also the Kellogg Foundation, which is pretty well known to be, a liberal organization that is trying to, promote DEI and the, equity and inclusion ideas, intersectionality, all of those kinds of things into every segment of government and society.
All I know is that does not represent the way the majority of Alabamians feel, and yet somehow or another, he has wormed his way into all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And to tie back to what we talked about before the break, he also said publicly that he thought that anyone who is opposed to Medicaid expansion was opposed due to latent racism.
Well, thank you for wrapping that all up with a nice, neat bow. That's
Yeah, so you're welcome on that. It's just one of those, it can't be that we're concerned about, funding prisons or roads or things, or even schools if we combined budgets or shifted our taxation, situation. It can't be that we're concerned about the way that we're doing things. It's that we're racist. Having somebody in that role in a situation of authority, a really large authority, the law was changed for his appointment, loosely. I mean, it was not a super, slam dunk.
Right.
But his appointment, the way he is appointed, has been changed to where the governor has to give the stamp of, okay, yes. But this is somebody who has a lot of authority written into statute for the state of Alabama. And what's clear from this, from that racism talk about Medicaid, from his board membership on a sex education board that was promoting all of the gender issues.
Hey, Steph.
To now this latest thing, he's definitely not representing our values.
Stephanie Smith, Alabama Policy Institute. We are out of time, but thank you so much, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks, Phil.
Wow. AlabamaPolicy.org has got it all. Check it out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.